and welcome to the latest Diagonal Walking podcast. I'm Nick Corbell. Up until now, you've mainly had me talking in these podcasts, but that's all about to change. In what I hope will be a trend, I'm going to include discussions with others that I meet and walk with as I walk diagonally on these podcasts. From the start, I wanted diagonal walking to be a collaborative effort, and the Walk With Me idea, both virtually and walking with me in person, has always been at its core. I'm delighted, therefore, to be joined here by the award-winning playwright Simon Corbell, who also happens to be a cousin of mine. But he's probably better known to you as one of the co-writers of the West End and touring show The 39 Steps. We walked, along with his wife Judy, from Stoke to Fulford in Staffordshire, and recorded this after having completed 7 miles in a place called Mere Heath. It was a lovely hot and sunny day, so when we saw a pub, frankly it was a no-brainer. So in we popped, downed a pint or maybe two, and we had this conversation, which I'm going to play to you more or less verbatim now. The only thing I'd like to say before we start is when you hear the word cathedral, please insert the word university. So with that caveat, here we go. I'm with my cousin, Simon.
Hi, Nick.
Simon Corbell. I'm doing a million steps, but he's been happy with 39 in his life.
Very good.
So one of the things I'm doing with people who walk with me as we go along on the diagonal path is just checking in with them as to where they are vis-a-vis where the country's going. And I'm always struck by a piece of graffiti I saw on Liverpool Cathedral. And it just said, "Are you optimistic about the future?" Which is a very big question. And it's like throwing somebody a medicine ball when you're playing French cricket. But let me throw that question at you, Simon. Are you optimistic about the future of the country?
The country. A guarded yes.
Go on, guarded.
I'm deeply unhappy about the current direction.
Right.
Of the country, I think. Drifting along, rudderless, in the wrong direction, away from Europe, because I'll lay my cards on the table. I'm a passionate European.
Fair enough.
And I cannot get my head around the whole of that. And so that, I don't know, it clouds the issue for a lot of people at the moment, but that is for me, I think. Being a passionate environmentalist as well, although there are some good things happening, we see species declining steadily, rapidly, in huge numbers, all sorts of things, which doesn't fill me with great optimism. And yet, so I'm an optimistic person at heart, I guess, perhaps that saves the day. I don't know.
So when you say that the whole sort of moving away from Europe thing is clouding things, what do you mean by that?
It certainly seems to be clouding any kind of debate. About anything else, such as we've been talking about HS2 on this walk, because we're on very near the route of HS2.
Yeah, and that's an issue around my
I haven't heard a whisper about it recently.
No.
For instance, and that's something I feel passionately about against. So it seems like how long are we going to be in this kind of stasis?
Yes.
With the
It does feel like that. We're neither one place nor the other at the moment. I mean, there's no optimism generally. Mm. I'm kind of hearing from you that it's going to get better.
Long-term better, I hope, because I'm positive about humanity generally.
Yeah.
I'm very pessimistic about climate change and what that might mean in the next 50, 100 years.
Yes.
But perhaps optimistic for 200 or 300 years hence.
Right, yes. Well, it's funny when you look back in history, there's sort of big moments now, coming off the gold standard or something like that would have been seen as absolutely catastrophic. But when you look back with the benefit of hindsight, it becomes a mere blip.
I don't remember coming off the gold standard. Yeah, so
but that sort of thing, you know, or even when we entered Europe, it was seen to be a big seminal moment.
It was, I just remember.
Impact it has on individuals' lives, I think is going to be an interesting one because I'm not sure people have really thought that through, and it seems to be a heart and head thing going on.
It is, and as the old cliche has it, it's the economy, stupid,
yeah,
which is how I thought, because I did waver a bit. The you know, the referendum.
Yeah.
To be honest, I did look at the other side of things.
Yeah.
And in the end, I came back to that old argument. It's the economy, stupid.
Yes.
Every model that I could see said this makes no sense whatsoever.
Yes.
This is totally crazy. And I thought, surely everyone can see that, at least.
That's interesting, because I think that, certainly from those of us who were on the Remain side of the debate, that kind of, surely you can see this sort of thing, is quite mystifying, isn't it?
Mm.
That people can't see it, or whether that's irrelevant to the reason they may have voted that way.
I think it is relevant, because I think people feel more passionately about things. Like, here we are drinking our pints of beer, which we've been in Europe, managed to hold on to that.
Yes.
I remember at one point there was a date, there was a debate about save our pint.
Yes, that's right.
The Sun probably claimed victory for having kept our pint.
Almost certainly,
And here we are drinking them still. But there's a lot of people feel very passionately on that kind of level.
Yes.
Which I feel passionately about too. I'm glad we have pints and the miles, and we drive on the left and all this, and let's keep... I'm actually a conservative in that kind of a way.
Yes.
But also, you know, I don't know my heart rule my head to that extent.
Yes.
And I do see it as a... There goes the motorbike you warned about.
Yep.
I do see it as a overwhelmingly argumentative persuasion from the head to say this is crazy.
And yet, if we had the vote again tomorrow, all the indications seem to be that it'd still be a very close thing.
I'm sure.
Yes, it's entrenched positions.
Yeah.
But if we kind of, I don't want to make it all about Brexit.
Yeah, here we go, you see.
Yeah. and kind of thinking beyond that, so you were saying that you are passionate about climate change, for example. Do you think, I'm kind of hearing between the lines from you, and tell me if I've got this right or wrong, that because we're so fixated on one thing, we're not thinking about the other things, which are probably even more important.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, unfortunately, the environment seems to come and go as a kind of fad.
Yes, it seems to be an optional extra, doesn't it?
I won't even say politics, but it's public, popular thinking.
Yeah.
And it's a, we've all heard, but no, it is for all of us. It's not just whether you're interested in whether elephants survive or whatever it is. For all of us, it is a global problem and possibly a global catastrophe on a level you cannot imagine.
Yes.
And it really has not hit home.
No.
It has not hit home.
And in its own right is bigger than the whole sort of Europe question.
Massively. It is massively.
And I would say, I think I feel as passionately as you do about that, whilst I still feel very strongly about climate change and environment, around the way that technology is going.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunities that offers, and also the hazards that it places in our path.
Yes.
None of those conversations seem to be happening.
No.
Until there's a problem.
Yeah.
So there's no, we're not getting ahead of technology. Mm. We're letting it drive us.
Yes, very much.
And that I find very worrying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you think of the recent things with Facebook, for example, or even the TSB cock-up. You know, then you look at that, you're thinking, that's because nobody in the boardroom understood this. And there's just simply no cognizance of the power of this stuff. Yeah.
And yet you're right, the opportunities are there, for instance, to reduce carbon emissions.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been conducting a lot of work recently, sat at home with people in Lapland, in London, and I'm not moving from my desk.
Yes.
I'm sat there and thinking, I don't have to go to London for this meeting.
Exactly.
I had a meeting between four of us. One of us was in London, one was in where I live in Derbyshire in the Peak District, one was in Spain, the other guy was in Finland driving along.
Yeah.
And we're having a meeting.
And this is
we're
amazing,
a team.
Isn't it?
We're a creative team working on something.
And yet that's actually technology. It's probably 10 to 12 years old.
Yes.
I remember having those sorts of meetings for clients way back.
Mm.
But soon we'll be having those conversations with avatars. You know, these sorts of things are just going to happen. It's science fiction.
Yeah.
But if we let the machines take over and dictate the pace, I think we're really on the cusp of something at the moment.
Yeah, is it the machines or is it the people driving?
Well, that's
attitude to the machine.
Well, I think it's with artificial intelligence, it's going to be really interesting.
It is the machine.
It could become the machine.
Yeah, yeah.
But those sorts of discussions, because the generation, it's our generation who are in control, they don't get it.
Mm.
And they don't understand it, and so it just doesn't happen.
And it seems very comforting to have this rather backward conversation around Europe, which I agree with you, yeah. just seems to be circular argument all the time, if that's what you were saying. But it's very convenient because it stops us having the proper conversations about things that are really important.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you've got a 13-year-old daughter. How do you think she sees the way that the world's going? Do you have those conversations?
We don't really have that general conversation, to be honest. But I like her attitude.
Right.
Because she's just acquired, in the past couple of years, a smartphone, which I don't have. She's got it. And she's decided she's not going on Facebook.
Very good.
She's seen the dangers.
Yes.
And I think that's quite refreshing. And I think we're hearing that a lot amongst the generation coming up.
Yes.
That they're seeing the mistakes, perhaps.
Seeing the hazards, in fact.
Yes.
Probably
seeing the
more
hazards.
So than our generation.
Yeah.
They're more wary of that sort of thing, even though they're very trusting generations.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Because we've been talking on this walk, this stretch, 7 miles we've just been doing, around Airbnb, for example, and how that
Indeed.
Is completely based on trust. Mm. But in a way that 20 years ago, you wouldn't have dreamed of letting people into your house and giving them the key, you know. And eBay, another good example, you know.
Yeah.
I remember when my father died, he had a load of camera equipment, and I was selling it through some magazine. And I said to the guy, how does this work then? He said, well, you post it to me. If I like it, I send you a check.
Mm.
Which is basically the eBay model.
Yes.
But at the time, I said, well, you must be joking. I'm not doing that. You know, we just wouldn't have done that 20 years ago.
No,
it's weird, isn't it?
And yet the world does run on trust and has always run on trust. And these things actually... It's another good example of technology, actually, underlying how the world does run on trust, for example, and bringing that home to you.
Yes.
You know, because you could walk in your local shop tomorrow and put stuff in your pockets and walk out without any problem, probably.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't even think of it because that's not how the world runs.
Yeah.
You know.
But that goes back to, I think, your point earlier about being optimistic about humanity rather than necessarily about the system or the politicians.
Yes.
I do feel... I don't know, I'll throw this out there. I do feel seriously let down by the quality of leadership that we have at the moment.
Totally.
It just seems so backward-looking.
Totally.
The politicians and the press.
Yeah.
And if I was, so our kids are in their 20s, if I was in my 20s looking at this system, I'd be thinking, seriously?
Mm-hmm.
So let me get this straight. You go into a church hall, and there's some balsa wood partitions. You give me a pencil, right? And what do I do with that? You know, it's like a Bob Newhart sketch.
Yeah, I gotta say.
You know, it just seems madness. It must seem madness to them.
Yeah.
And that goes back to my technology point. There must be better ways of kind of checking in with the zeitgeist than a vote every 5 years.
And yet, in America, they had these voting machines.
Yes.
And they had all the fiasco of the hanging chads. And all that. It didn't work.
I'm kind of going beyond that.
I'm a pencil man.
Yeah, but it's more. I'm going beyond that to voting. Yeah,
voting.
Whether or not voting still works, you know, or whether you have different ways of harnessing the democratic will.
Well, we've had that with the referendum.
Yes.
So, well, I'm not sure where you're going with that one.
Well, that's because that was a very black and white decision.
Yes.
It seems to be what's missing here is a viable means of having a constructive debate.
Yeah.
And whether people are capable of it, which sounds quite elitist.
I think the debate is the interesting thing. And I think I'd like to see more debate encouraged at every level, right from school onwards. You know, I think because we're good at a nation at debating, actually.
Yes.
I think it's actually one of our strengths, but it's not encouraged enough, and we're leaving it up to the politicians.
Yes.
And well, I think it's not happening enough.
The referendum was a very good example of that. The politicians on both sides took the active decision to go right down to the lowest common denominator.
Yes.
And to really use very basic soundbite type arguments. Mm. Which were wrong on both sides.
Yes.
And we were seriously let down.
We were very badly let down. It was a very, very poor level. And
but there's no taking lessons from that. That's what worries me.
Yes. We actually should be... Another instance of where technology should be moving us forward is... You know, there's levels now to have debates, but the way the press seems to be dominant... And maybe it's because I listen to Radio 4 too much, I don't know, but I listen to the Today programme and... 3 times an hour. Then let's look at the papers.
Yeah.
And they look at, and you know, they're all
they've all got their
largely
grind,
pro-Brexit, pro-extreme Brexit.
And some of the stuff they come
and you're
out
thinking,
with.
Wait a minute, how many people actually buy this paper or have these kind of opinions? Yet such weight is given to these unelected journalists, so-called journalists, who lazily sit in their desk and fire off complete barrage of nonsense.
I think that goes back to, that's kind of our generation still think that the press is important. My kids don't read newspapers.
No. You know? Even I don't buy a newspaper.
No, I don't buy
a newspaper. I used to try and make myself. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't.
Well, I buy... I have one newspaper, which is The Economist, which does class itself as a newspaper. And that's to inform me, rather. It's not opinionated in the ways... And some of the language that some of the press uses
is
atrocious.
It's atrocious. And it gets broadcast on BBC Radio 4, even on BBC Radio 4, you know, three times in the hour as you're waking up. And that's listened, I know. It's got something like 10 million listeners, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so that's a fair chunk of the intelligent population of the country.
Yeah.
Are getting fed that.
Yeah.
And you think...
And it's
not a proper debate.
It's out of whack, absolutely.
It's out of whack.
It's giving too much weight to a very small elite. And I think, to some extent, that's where we did see the kickback on the referendum, which was quite interesting. Where, what was it Michael Gove said about, we don't trust experts anymore?
Yes.
And that was a kind of head and hands moment, wasn't it?
Really? Yeah. I was listening to Trump, though, you know.
Yeah.
That was it this morning on the radio anyway. Yeah. The NHS, there's a hospital in London. They have the floor is covered in blood because of knife crime in London. Because they don't have, because of the argument of having guns.
Yes,
we shouldn't have guns in London. We've had maybe 40-something deaths, which is terrible and tragic in London this year.
Yeah.
You know, but that does not in any way compare to gun deaths in America.
No.
What sort of an argument is that?
So
it's sort of on that level.
So to kind of bring this round full circle then, do we feel optimistic we could do about the future? Whether this is just a blip we're going through, going back to my gold standard point, and we'll live through it, and then something else will happen. Or whether it's a more sort of fundamental problem that we have around, we're just incapable almost as human beings to cope with the amount of change that's happening at the moment, both on climate change. So your example around climate change, my example around technology, these are both massive issues, which, you know, it's much easier just to ignore and take another sip of the pint, really.
Yeah, it is, you know, and you know, you get to a certain stage in life, I think, as well, which you and I are at, where there's a danger of to say, sip another pint.
It'll be the next generation.
Over to you. But, you know, it's not, because we have experience and opinions which are very valid. And I'm not there yet.
No.
I hope I never get there.
Yes, but there is, I think we saw a bit of that in the referendum, which is, I think it was very interesting that in the Scottish referendum, they gave the vote to 16 pluses.
That seemed like a really good debate.
Yeah.
They had a good old debate there.
But just everybody got a bit scared when it wasn't going the way that they wanted it. I mean, I wasn't in favour of Scottish independence, but I turned around from the bit that if enough people said they wanted it on that, and it seemed a valid debate, fair enough.
Yeah.
But it was that valid debate point I don't think we had around Brexit.
No, I don't think we did.
No. Good, well, thank you very much. It's been very helpful. It's good to check in and make sure you can get your own prejudices challenged. So thanks.
Sorry, I didn't challenge them.
No. Really, yeah, well, you know, it's all valid.
Of a mind.
<It was cool>.
Thank you.
There you are. I hope you've enjoyed this new form of podcast, the first of conversations with diagonal walkers other than myself. There's already more in the can, so keep an eye and an ear out for them. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, do please rate it on iTunes. It really helps. Thank you, and see you again next time.